Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let me start with what I saw last night. After the Steelers beat the Baltimore Ravens to go to 11-0, Mike Tomlin was not impressed. Tomlin was saying things like the team's performance was, quote, really JV. He repeatedly used the word, quote, unacceptable. And then he added this as well.
It was just bad by all parties involved, man. Coaches first, players second. We make no excuses. We seek no comfort. We didn't play well or coach well tonight.
All right, so this guy's coming with a straight fire. And then it only got better when somebody asked him, why did the team have so much trouble in the red zone? He said simply,
us sucking.
Again.
Us sucking.
I mean again. He said all these things after a win. But Tomlin, let me tell you about Tomlin. Tomlin knew that thinking you are what your record says you are is bullcrap. He knew better. That's why he lit into his team after a win. That's why he lit into his team after it went to 11-0, because he knew that kind of play was going to catch up to them. He knew that kind of play was going to bite them in the ass. And he was right, because then they went out and they promptly lost to Washington. Then they lost to Buffalo. Now, instead of asking the question of, are they good enough to win at all, we're asking ourselves the question, are they good enough to even win a playoff game? Or are they one and done? Because suddenly they looked all wrong. And what started out as just a few guys dropping a few passes became this slow-moving avalanche that has consumed the entire team. Like those drops infected everybody on both sides of the ball. Now, the good news is, last night, they were facing a two-win Cincinnati Bengal team. If ever there was a get-right game, it was that. You pound the Bengals, you get your mojo back, and you get ready for the postseason. You get back on track. You get back on the path. After all, they had beaten the Natty 11 straight times. 12 would be no problem. An 11-win team was about to punch a two-win team with a backup quarterback in the face. Bully the Bengals, get right. Except one problem. None of that happened. Last night was a complete and unadulterated disaster for the Steelers. And it all started before the game when Juju Smith-Schuster danced on the Bengals logo. Now, let me be very clear about Juju. This is a Juju Smith-Schuster house. I love the kid. I love the guy. Great game, great attitude, great ability. Believe me, the game needs more Juju. It does. I love the fact that this guy comes out and he dances on the opposing team's logo. I actually think it's great. I love it. He knows it's going to piss him off. He knows they're going to come looking for him. In other words, he is aware. He knows exactly what he's doing. He just doesn't give a bleep, which I love. The opposition, yeah, well, that's a different story. Not so much. Extremely motivated and proud world-class athletes do not like being disrespected. They're funny like that. And the Bengals did not like that at all. Bengals safety Von Bell said during the week, quote, we got to go out there between the lines and hit him and let him know where he stands, end quote. So when Juju danced on the Bengals logo and posted it on social media, it was on. And sure enough, who was the first guy to find Juju on the field? None other than Von Bell, and he let Juju know exactly where he stands.
There's some pressure from the Bengals. Roethlisberger, Juju Smith-Schuster is blown up, and the whistles blow.
Ben's not seeing it real well right now. I think they're going to challenge that ruling on the field, or whether that was a catch or not.
And a clear recovery,
Cincinnati
John Perry, there is.
There is a clear recovery.
And Von Bell there is saying, hey, you want to dance on our logo pregame? Really?
Reviewing the play, the receiver completed the process of a catch. As a result, it is a catch and a fumble.
And then Von Bell completed the process of hitting Juju with a 2x4. Like, if you want to sum up last night in a single play, it was right there. Juju getting wrecked and fumbling after dancing on the team logo, and it led directly to points for the Bengals. Pretty incredible. Almost as incredible as Bell being asked after the game what he saw in that play, and him saying, quote, I seen 19.
I seen 19. I'm not a boastful guy, man. I just go out there and let my play do the talking, man. You know, it just happened that they come today. And I just play football, man. Just going out to do the shit I'm going to play.
What did you see on that play? Quote, I seen 19. Hey, let me be clear, too. I'm not going to tell Juju to stop dancing. Honestly, I love it. Keep it up. Nor am I going to tell opposing players to stop hitting him legally. Keep that up, too. I love it all. It's great. Clearly, though, while posting that may have pumped Juju and his followers up, it got the Bengals way more hyped. And that post last night, that particular post, did more damage than good for Juju and the Steelers. But as bad as that was, that's not the reason they lost. Let's also be clear about that. That's not the reason they lost that game. It was just another subplot in a horrible night for the Steelers. Here's the worst part for Steeler fans. Juju's dancing is the least of your worries. That doesn't even crack the top 10 because there's a lot more to worry about when it comes to Big Ben. Juju's dancing and fumble weren't even the worst part of that play. The most bizarre part was Roethlisberger hitting Smith for a 2-yard gain on 3rd and 7. How often are we seeing that from Roethlisberger? Him just nickel-diming and dinking and diming his way down the field. Dunking, I should say. It's like some of the most monotonous, mind-numbing, unwatchable offensive football I've ever seen in my life. Especially from that guy. Hell, he did hit the 60,000-yard passing mark last night, right? Imagine if he'd been doing this his entire career. The thing that he's been doing the last several weeks. It probably would have taken 60,000 years to get those 60,000 yards. I mean, again, it's like unwatchable. Look, Benjamin just isn't right. In fact, he's all wrong. He's not consistent. He's not making the right reads. He's not getting time to go deep because he's constantly under pressure. And when he does have time to take shots down the field, he's inaccurate. I mean, dude looks like he is what he is. 38 years old with serious mileage on him. You want ugly. How about these numbers? These numbers in the first half. 7 of 16 for 19 yards. 1 INT. 1 fumble lost. 0 TDs. Those are not Ben Roethlisberger numbers. That's some Duck Hodges bleep right there. And that pick. Man, that pick wasn't just bad. That pick was awful.
Cincinnati rushing just 3. Ben is intercepted. Picked off and high-stepping is Mackenzie Alexander for Cincinnati. And flags fly.
People will be enforced from the end of the run. Automatic. First down.
I mean, like, I know as you get older, you lose the ability to do certain things. Is this guy blind? Like, what was he looking at? What did he see on that play? I'm not sure what was worse for Steeler fans. The fact that Mackenzie Alexander barely moved for that pick, or that he high-stepped on the way out of bounds. But first of all, or worst of all, it's just defenses do not fear Ben anymore. They're not afraid of him. You cannot consistently win in the NFL if your quarterback does not scare an opposing defense. And right now, the only people that Ben is scaring are Steeler fans. It got so bad last night, there was Mason Rudolph discussion on the timeline. That's not good. And then this quote from Tomlin is not going to make Steeler fans feel any better about Ben's performance.
No, it's not injury related. It just wasn't good enough, like all of us, me included. You know, we got to be better.
No, it's not injury related. Is it age related? Like what is it? And by the way, it's not like that defense was awesome either. That crew had been terrifying earlier in the season. Now they're banged up and they're giving up points to the Bengals. And you figure, yeah, that'll happen. Like Joe Burrow is special. He's got a bright future. He's going to jump up. He's going to bite you now, even as a rookie. Except it wasn't Joe Burrow. He's been out for weeks. And his backup is out too. So we're talking about Ryan Finley. And it's not just that they were missing Burrow. They were also missing the top running back, receiver, and defensive player. And yet Ryan freaking Finley was carving them, making them look bad. Ryan Finley was out there looking like Michael Vick as he fooled the entire Steeler D on this play.
From the Pittsburgh 23, handoff out of the gun, fake, and it's taken by Finley, the 20, the 10, the block at the 5, running on the hash mark, into the end zone, touchdown Bengals! The Cincinnati quarterback with a 23-yard run with a fake handoff and over the left tackle.
Westwood won, and the Steelers are making Ryan Finley look like Lamar Jackson and Mike Vick rolled into one, untouched, against a team that used to have the best record in the league only a few minutes ago. Tomlin was asked if the team was confident.
Mike, what's your sense regarding your team's confidence level, and are you concerned it's getting a little fragile?
Should we better not be confident after a performance like that?
Straight fire. That's the truth. Not only did they not look like an 11-0 team last night, they didn't even look like an 11-3 team last night. They looked more like a 3-11 team going up against a 2-win team and losing. In other words, they're playing their worst possible football at the worst possible time. They look like a lock to go 1-done in the playoffs. Like, if you can't beat a 2-win Bengals team with a backup quarterback in a must-win situation, how the hell are you going to beat anybody who matters in the postseason? Wait, I'll answer my own question. You can't. You won't. So never, ever, ever tell me again that you are what your record says you are, because the Steelers were 11-0 about 5 minutes ago. And if there's a bigger lie than that, then it's not coming to mind. Because on paper, at 11-0, they look like a bully that you want no part of. But right now, there is nobody in the AFC who doesn't want to run into these guys in the playoffs, because they're broken, they're running out of time, and there is no easy fix. Oh, and good for Roethlisberger saying that he wants to play next year. The question is there anybody in that facility that wants to take him up on that? What the hell happened to these guys? I mean, they may not have been as good as their record indicated, but what the hell happened to these guys? 1-800-636-8686. You're hanging out with friends. You're putting back a few drinks. A few becomes a few too many. As the evening comes to an end and people start to head out, you think of calling for a ride. Nah, you live nearby. You think you'll make it home. It's not a big deal. What are the odds that you'll get pulled over anyway? And even so, what's the worst that could happen? Your insurance goes up. You lose your license. You lose your job. You total your car. You kill somebody. Everybody knows about the risks of driving drunk. The results are tragic. They're often deadly. However, that still does not stop everybody from getting behind the wheel while under the influence. That's why police officers are out there right now looking for impaired drivers on our roads to save lives. So if you think that it's okay to drive after a few drinks, think again. Play it safe. Plan ahead. Get a ride. It only takes one mistake to change your life or somebody else's forever. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA. CeCe, it's been a minute or two. It's great to have you on the show. How are you doing, CeCe, and how is life for you after baseball?
It's been a minute, Jim. How you doing? I didn't know that American League stat, the lefty. That's crazy. It's been good. I mean, I keep telling people I should have retired 5 years ago. I'm really good at retirement. I've been enjoying, you know, being home with the family, kind of hanging out. Obviously, it's been a tough year this year, but, you know, being able to reintegrate into my family, had that time back that I missed, it's been a blessing. So I'm doing pretty good.
That's great. It's great to hear your voice. CeCe Sabathia joining us. You know, I want to get into the documentary, of course, in a moment, but the Sabathia family Christmas card is the stuff of legend. As an example, a few years back, there was a ViewMaster Christmas card. Am I correct in thinking that this year there is a Chia Pet theme card? And if so, how did that come to be?
Yeah, so this year was the Chia Pet. My wife comes up with these cards every year. I just kind of show up. I mean, we've done everything from Subway sandwiches to, I mean, we did Home Alone. We did, scenes out of Home Alone. So it's been all kind of stuff. And then this year, she thought it'd be cool to dress up as Chia Pets. And that was the Christmas card. So the Christmas card this year was a Chia Pet box with us on the cover and a Chia Pet inside.
Yeah, we're showing it on CBS Sports Network right now. It looks awesome. So, CeCe, the documentary about your life comes and debuts this evening. How does it feel to be a few hours away from sharing this with the rest of the world?
No, it feels good. I'm excited. When we started filming last year, it wasn't in mind to have a documentary. It was just to film some cool moments, coming up on my last year, 3,000 strikeouts, 250 wins. thought it'd be cool to kind of have it, like, you know, home movie stylish to have for the kids and my grandkids or whoever else. But, you know, got through the middle, halfway through the season, and thought it'd be good to, you know, kind of try to tell the whole story. You know, never really talked about my battle with addiction or what led me to go to rehab. You know, there had been a lot of speculation around that time. So, you know, now 5 years later, being a year removed from retirement, I thought it'd be a good time to, you know, just kind of dig into all of that stuff.
CC Sabathia is joining us. In fact, I was going to ask you about that because you could have done the doc and it could have just been highlights about your career and most people would have done it that way. But you did want to talk about the tough times. You did want to get into all that. You wanted to share that. Why was that so important to you?
It's weird because the tough times is so much a part of my story. You know, just from the time that I, you know, growing up, like, you know, everything, you know, dealing with so much death and you know, from a young age, you know, I couldn't tell, you know, the happy times without telling, you know, everything that kind of went along with it. So, yeah, the sad times are, I guess, are part of my story, but, you know, I just want people to know that, you know, athletes and, you know, whoever else, you know, celebrities have, you know, normal lives and go through different normal things just like everybody else. And, you know, addiction has no prejudice, you know, white, black, rich, poor, you know, addiction strikes everybody. And hopefully this doc can help somebody.
Under the Grapefruit Tree, the CC Sabathia story does debut this evening on HBO 9 p.m. Eastern. In 2015, CC, when you checked yourself into rehab, one of the assignments was to write a letter to yourself as if you were one of the family members. You wrote from the perspective of your son, Karsten. You said that when you were reading the letter, you realized that it sounded a lot like speaking to your father. What was that moment like?
It was just like a weight just lifted off my shoulders. Just like this darkness that, you know, I was just trying to figure out what had been wrong with me. I mean, you know, my father, by the time I went to rehab, my dad had been dead for 12 years. But I had never really, you know, grieved or dealt with, you know, any of those emotions. I just tried to pack them away and just keep going. And, you know, I started reading that letter, and it was literally me writing a letter to my father. And like, in that moment, I just felt so much better and just felt so enlightened, I guess, if that makes sense. As to why I was drinking and why I was, you know, what I was trying to, the feelings I was trying to chase away. So I just felt, you know, in that moment that I had a better understanding of why I was actually an alcoholic.
CC Sabathia is joining us. CC, how old were you when you started to drink?
I was 14 the first time I had a drink. 14.
So, for instance, like, your father never saw you play baseball in high school. What kind of an impact did that have on you?
You know what? At the time, I didn't really think it had an impact on me. But, you know, looking back, you know, on it now, it was just time that we missed. You know, if I had been so close with them, you know, up until I was 12 years old, and they split, and then I didn't see him again. So it was almost like he had turned me into this, you know, great athlete that he never really saw, you know, got a chance to see what it turned into. And then even, you know, the same thing as far as me, you know, getting to the big leagues. And, you know, his dream was to watch me pitch in Yankee Stadium. All he ever talked about was me pitching for the Yankees. And, you know, for me to be able to come here and win a World Series and him not be a part of that, you know, that hurt too, because, you know, all these dreams that, you know, we had together, I got a chance to live out without him. And that still hurts.
Right. So how did you go about coping with that? That's really difficult. How did you cope with that?
You know what? It's just in that letter and you know, dealing with the emotion of, you know, not having him around. And you know, sometimes if I'm driving down the street and I'm thinking about him and I need to cry, then I'll cry, you know. Or there's not a day that goes by that there's not something that reminds me of my dad or makes me think about my dad. You know, I still miss him a lot to this day. And, you know, not trying to hide or run from that emotion is what, you know, not makes me turn to a bottle every day.
CC Sabathia is joining us, being very candid about his background and story. So, CC, when you were drinking during the regular season, were you doing it when you were pitching? I mean, are we talking about a pretty regular habit? What was it like?
Yeah, I never was on the mound. Actually, you know, had a drink on the mound or, you know, during the game or anything like that. But it would be right after games. And then I would, you know, I would drink the next 3 days, take 2 days off pitch, and then, you know, be on that routine. And almost, you know, not even almost, to the point where, you know, I did that for 15 years. So when I came out of rehab in 2016, I didn't know if I could pitch without alcohol. Like, it had become so much a part of my routine that I was worried about it not being in my routine, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy, because I was going to say, how were you able to perform at a level like that, drinking like that? And then you posed the question. I was actually concerned whether or not I could do it without the alcohol. But I'll go back to my first question. How were you able to perform the way you did and have the career you did drinking like that?
Honestly, I just kind of perfected detoxing myself. You know, I would go to the park that next day after I pitched. I would drink all night. I would go to the next day to the park the next day and just do cardio like crazy. Sweat everything out and then do it again. And I would do that for 2 days straight. And then I wouldn't drink at all. It would just be, you know, water and Gatorade. And I would pitch. I mean, you know, when you're young, in your 20s, and, you know, I was in my 20s and early 30s, you could pretty much do anything.
We're talking to CeCe Sabathia. That's amazing. Like, so in October 2015, you finally felt like you had to reach out. You had to ask for help. How did you go about doing that? And why did you know at that point that this is the time I have to do this?
You know what, Jim? That was the first time, getting back to, you know, me being drunk on the mound, or, you know, how did it affect me? That was the first time that I actually was drunk at the field where I couldn't throw a bullpen. That morning, that Sunday morning, you know, and I was just like fed up. You know, it was a bunch of stuff that was going on during the season 2015. I got, you know, a picture of me out on the balcony smoking weed in Atlanta. Then I get into a altercation outside of a bar in Toronto. So I knew after Toronto that I needed to go to rehab. I just didn't know if I would, you know, have the balls to speak up and you know, say that I needed help. That's the hardest part about addiction is actually saying that you need help. So, you know, after that, you know, we clinched in New York, go to Baltimore, and, you know, I had drank that whole weekend and got to the field that Sunday morning and couldn't throw my bullpen. So I grabbed Chris Young and Dylan Betances, two of my closest friends still to this day, and told them what I was thinking about doing. And they both encouraged me that I was doing the right thing. And I went to Joe's office, and he called Cashman. And, you know, they both, the Yankee organization top to bottom, but really, you know, Cash and Joe 1,000% had my back and just made me feel like I was making the right decision, even on the eve of a playoff game. You know, they didn't care. It was just all about my well-being and, you know, how I was going to be for my family. And, you know, that made me feel like I was making the right decision when your employer, you know, the biggest franchise in sports history has your back like that. It makes you feel like you're making the right decision.
You know, CeCe, that's so true. That is so critical and that's so pivotal. But I can't tell you how much I respect and admire that you're telling this story the way you are. And back to your point about the hardest part often is just saying, I need help. I need help. You also told the Daily News, quote, when we grow up in the hood, people were always telling us, don't cry, don't be a punk. You can't show any emotion, things like that. Is that what you're talking about in part when you say the hardest part is asking for help?
Yeah, I mean, I think for sure, you know, dealing with mental health in general, growing up in the hood, that's not a thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no such thing as mental health. So, you know, yeah, I mean, just actually, you know, saying that I need help, that I'm an alcoholic, that, you know, I can't control this, I think is the hardest thing for everyone. You know, just facing the addiction is the hardest part. The last 5 years of my life have been great. And I remember I used to sit on the other side when I was, you know, still drinking a lot, and, you know, people get sober and be like, man, my life is so much better now that I'm not drinking. I used to sit on the other side and be like, that's bullcrap. Like, I don't believe that. But now, 5 years being sober, you know, it's been the best 5 years of my life, and I definitely wouldn't have been able to pitch, you know, the tail end of my career had I been drinking the way I was early in my career. So, I mean, you know, dropping the alcohol was literally the best thing that you know, I could have ever did in my life.
We are talking to CeCe Sabathia. I'm really curious, like, when you look back on rehab, for instance, if the toughest thing was to ask for help and actually start that process, what was the experience then like, and what moments stick out to you the most?
Man, I'm going to be completely honest. Rehab, for me, was awesome. 29 days of no phone. Everybody knows where I'm at, and I just get a chance to, like, work on myself. I wish I could do that once a year, where I get a month to myself with no phone and just kind of reset. Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that sticks out to me, though, was, you know, writing a letter and just some of the things. Like, if you really...
CeCe, got you back there. So finish that thought really quickly. You were saying that if you could, it'd be great to have something like that every single year, like 29 days, 30 days, no phone, reset. You love rehab for that reason.
Yeah, I did, but just, you know, you were asking me what's the biggest thing that sticks out.
Right.
You know, just me writing that letter.
Right.
So that happened early on in the rehab process, and you know, I just felt like, you know, I was on my way to figuring out, you know, what was actually wrong with me. So, yeah, I mean, I think rehab can be really helpful if you go in there and with the right mind frame of trying to figure out what's actually wrong with you.
So, CeCe, I mean, you sound absolutely amazing, and you did the hard work, and you turned your life around. Can I ask you something? I mean, normally guys have to hit rock bottom to get that kind of leverage on themselves. I mean, how close did you come to losing everything?
I mean, for me, I guess rock bottom is different for everybody, you know? For me, rock bottom was not being able to do my job. Like, that, you know, for me, I've always felt like I was here to pitch. That's what I was literally born to do, is to go out on the mound in front of how many ever thousand people and throw a baseball. And when this stuff off the field is getting in the way of what I was born to do, then, you know, that's when I feel like I needed to speak up.
All right, so before I let you go, I'm curious, if that's what you were born to do and that's your identity, a lot of professional athletes will say that, and then when they have to make that transition to life and they can no longer do, quote, what they're born to do, it can be really challenging. It seems like you've made it look pretty easy. Has it been? What's that transition been like for you?
It's been easy for me just because, you know, I felt like I was done with the competition part of my life. Like, you know, people, I was talking to Ryan Rucco, we do the podcast together, we was talking the other day, and he was, you know, asking me, did I miss it? And I don't, because, you know, when I was pitching in the All-Stars at 12 years old and going out, you know, and I would start all the games, obviously, because I was the pitcher. So if it was a big game to be started, I was starting that game. I got that same feeling that I had at 12 as going out in Yankee Stadium, you know, at 30 years old and pitching in those games. So, you know, for me, I have been pitching in big games, to me, for 30 years. You know what I'm saying? So I was done with the competition part of my life. Obviously, you know, the way my career ended, leaving my shoulder out there, it couldn't have ended in a better way for me. Like, that for me is literally how I wanted to go out. I literally left everything out on that mound at Yankee Stadium. I, you know, had a stent put in my heart before my last year. You know, my shoulder gave out. My knee is out there. So, no, I mean, the way I played the game, I left everything out there.
I was going to say, you literally left everything out there. So, CeCe, finally, and I'm really excited for you to have this drop this evening, what would you say to somebody who is listening right now who's having trouble with alcohol but has not taken the steps to seek help?
I think, I think the biggest thing is just getting help. And if you can watch this story tonight and it can inspire you, or you listening to this right here and, you know, you feel like you need help, you know, reach out, because if there is help out there, and your life can get better for sure.
But yesterday was a very sad day. Yesterday, we all received the news that Hall of Famer Kevin Green had passed away at the age of 58. And that one hits especially close to home, because I loved talking to Kevin Green. No, actually, I loved Kevin Green. I love this guy personally. Every conversation he and I had was really special. And we had quite a few throughout his entire career and after his career as well. He always came on this show. He always came on my TV programs, whatever they were. And it's an interesting business in the sense that there are some people that you can talk to a lot on the program and never feel like you actually get to know them. How many times have you heard me say that? Quote, we don't know any of these guys. And then there are some people that you can talk to just once and you feel like you've known them for years. Kevin Green was that kind of guy. Kevin Green was a supernova. Not my words, but his. And he was correct when he said that. Absolutely correct. He told The Athletic what it meant to him to play in Pittsburgh. He said, quote, the energy that I felt playing in front of the Steeler Nation, it fueled me. I felt like a supernova. If I burn out, so be it, but I want to burn with an intensity that few have ever seen. The fan base fed that. He went on, quote, I just had so much energy playing in front of that fan base because they wanted to see defense. They wanted to see good, solid football play and knocking the bleep out of people. And I was all about it, and our defense was all about it, and we loved it. End quote. You know, for perspective and background, when we're talking about Kevin Green, we're talking about a guy who walked on at Auburn, but his goal was to walk on as a punter. Instead, he gets thrown in as a running back, and that didn't quite work out. But he went to work on himself, and after, quote, jacking up some fraternity cats, end quote, he came back. He made the team, and then he was the best defensive player on that team. Then he went on to become the defensive player of the year in the NFL. Third all-time in sacks with 160. Five-time Pro Bowler. Three-time All-Pro. And played for the Rams, the Steelers, the Panthers, the 49ers. And there really was nothing he couldn't do. He could blitz. He could drop into coverage. He could meet you in the hole. Crush you. He once said, quote, "I wasn't the biggest and I wasn't the fastest, but as long as you have a motor, you have heart that will overcome any physical limitations," end quote. Like, nobody lived that truth more than Kevin Green. And everything he did on the football field was just the start of who he was. He was a captain in the National Guard, a wrestler, a coach, a family man. And I hate that I have to use past tense in all of this because he was so young. Just 58. And given the way he lived his life, he had so much more to give, so much more to live for. And again, talking to him was awesome. We had some great, great conversations on this show. As an example, he hated the idea that Brett Favre might have hit the deck in order to help out Michael Strahan.
Do you have a problem with the way he got that record?
No question, Rome. I mean, he had a great year this year. A great, great year. But, oh, good heavens, I just, the way it happened, it doesn't agree with me because, first of all, it was a running play. You can't sack a quarterback on a running play. That's a tackle for a loss if you do. Only time you can sack a quarterback is on a passing play. If you look at that play, every offensive lineman was downfield blocking. I mean, Amon Green, he comes out and tells the huddle call he was supposed to get the ball. It was a running play. And then Favre comes out with the ball, running play, and falls down in front of Strahan. I'm not bitter about it. I just hate the way he got that record. I mean, great year, great year. Don't get me wrong. But the way he got that record, it was a running play anyway. I mean, good heavens. I'm sure it's not settling well with him. I know Michael.
See what I'm saying? These are the kind of conversations we had. Quote, "You can't sack a quarterback on a running play." Like, my guy was adamant. That was a running play, and therefore that's a tackle for a loss. That's not a sack. Here's Kevin Green talking about trying to tackle Bo Jackson.
Oh, good Lord. It was a freight train, an absolute freight train. I'll never forget hitting that man as he was coming through the C-gap with all I had, and he turned me around and just kept running. And then before I knew it, my position coach was all up in my grill, Romy, going, "You got to hit him, Green. You got to hit him." And I'm taking an ass chewing, and I'm thinking, I hit that man as hard as I possibly could, and for nothing. He went right through me like I was nothing.
Man, this guy's energy, this guy's passion, this guy's love for the game. You got to hit him, Green. You got to hit him. One of my favorite things back in the day, too, in addition to talking to Kevin Green, was talking to his sidekick in Pittsburgh, Greg Lloyd. I'll never forget the first time I met Greg Lloyd. He came into studio, and he came in, like, sleeveless. My man was so intimidating. Like, you want to talk about a gun show. You remember Greg Lloyd. You remember the way he played. You remember the way he got after it. You remember the way he carried himself. Dude, this dude was intimidating. So here's Kevin Green talking about his running mate, his sidekick in Pittsburgh, Greg Lloyd.
To have a hunting brother on the other side of you in that 3-4 zone pressure blitz scheme. He was half-cocked. He was just screaming. And you know, me on the other side, I'm freaking out, having a good old time. And we're just yelling at each other. I'll meet you at the quarterback. And we couldn't get there quick enough at the quarterback, you know. And it was just great playing beside him.
Kevin Green coming on this show talking about lots of different things. Also talking about the matchups. Talking about offensive tackle Eric Williams.
I mean, 6'6", bro. And 330 pounds. Great feet. And a mean, freaking militant brother, man. I mean, we battled. We fought. And really the only way you beat that is you fight fire with fire. And he had a great disposition for an offensive lineman, which is nasty and mean and, you know, just pissy and angry. And he wants to pull your heart out through your throat.
Like, when you listen to Kevin Green, find me somebody who had more passion for the game than this guy, who loved the game more than this guy. How can you not hear that and want to run through a wall? or not want to run through a wall. Kevin Green went on to coach. He coached the Packers for the Packers. He helped them to a Super Bowl win over Pittsburgh. And I don't know how you can hear him talking to Clay Matthews without getting chills. I'm going to roll the clip right now, but it's no shock that after Matthews had that conversation with Kevin Green, that he went out and he forced a game-changing fumble after having that conversation.
Everybody looks up to Wood as being a leader. He's gone. Nobody's standing up and rallying the troops. It is time. It is time.
Second and two, Pittsburgh at the Green Bay 33.
Check left, check left. Spill it, pick it.
Back off.
End off to Matthews.
Matthews with the biggest play of the game to date. Third turnover, Pittsburgh.
I read that. I knew that was coming.
Just so we're clear on that, on the sideline, Kevin Green is looking right into Clay Matthews' eyes saying, it is time. It is time. And then he went out and he made the game-changing play. And then Kevin and I connected once again after it was announced that he was a member of the Hall of Fame. So keep in mind, like, Kevin Green and I are pretty close in age. We've been having these conversations his entire career. I've always really prided myself on that. I've seen guys, like, when I first started in this business, everybody I spoke to was older than me. Now I'm older than most of the guys I talk to, but I've always taken pride in that I've talked to a number of these guys, Hall of Famers, when they were in college. And then we continue to maintain this relationship throughout their entire careers. And then to see somebody like that, that I've always felt so strongly about, get into the Hall of Fame, and I know what it meant to him, and I know what that game meant to him, to have a conversation with him about that on this show truly was awesome.
Hey, Romy, man, it is great to talk to you. It's been a while, brother.
Kevin, it's been a while. It is official. You are a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How does that feel? How does that sound?
Romy, man, that's just freaking crazy, man. I'm still, you know, my head's just kind of still spinning about it. I kind of always knew I had a chance, Romy, but, you know, I never really thought they'd put me in. They'd kind of been passing me over for guys, you know, that didn't play quite as long as I did and didn't put up the statistical production numbers that I did. And then they finally, you know, put me in. So it's definitely kind of cool, man.
Kevin Green, it's awesome. Conversations with him were always so good, always so good. Even the sign-offs were great. Great conversations back in the day, some wild conversations.
Yeah,
I'm really happy for you, man. I appreciated you all those years. I appreciate you still, and I'm really happy for you, Kevin.
Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot, man. I listen to your show, and I've been listening to it for a while, and I just always have great memories about our time together. I reminisce about that a lot, and I'm like, yeah, Roman was cool, and we had a lot of fun. Nothing but laughs, brother. Nothing but great memories, my man. I appreciate it.
You know, you don't get moments like that. As somebody who hosts a show, I mean, normally you don't have like a relationship like that. So that kind of summed up that relationship and how much I love that guy, how much I love those conversations. And again, you know, I don't play favorites. I can't play favorites. But Kevin Green, as you can tell, you can hear it in my voice right now. That was one of my all-time favorite guys. So I am genuinely, genuinely going to miss him and those conversations. I loved hearing him back today. I hate the fact that we're never going to have another one like that again. Nothing but great memories. And I'm going to end it with Kevin Green's thoughts on life.
Bro, I just think it's having a passion for life, man, and having a passion for all the things that you do. I had a passion being involved in the military. I had a passion being involved with Boy Scouts, you know, and I just football and wrestling and just having a passion and intensity for life. And, you know, when you're having fun, living and having fun doing things, it's going to show, Rome. You know, it's going to show. You can't hide that. That passion and intensity that you have for life is going to bubble up and come out, and it's going to be contagious. That's the way I choose to live my life, is love life, have a passion and intensity for it. Let it flow. Let love flow for what you do.
What an amazing statement. His passion did show. He couldn't hide it. It did bubble up. It did come out. It was contagious. It was inspirational. Let love flow for what you do. So that's why that one hit hard. I love this guy. One of those athletes who did kind of come up at the same time, always made himself available to the program, was fierce, competitive, determined, you know, but had love. Rest in peace, brother. Kevin Green. Had to share my thoughts on that. I know we were having a lot of fun, and I want to keep it upbeat, and I still want to keep it upbeat, man. He, believe me, he would not want a pity party. He'd want us all to come hard. But I do want to celebrate his life and his career and mention that he was way more than just a Hall of Fame player. I mean, to have a life like that in and of itself would be dramatic enough, but he was way more than that. That's a jungle legend right there. I love Kevin Green. You know this. You can tell. R.I.P., my brother. R.I.P., thanks for everything. All right, so telephone number is toll-free. It's wide open. We still need to go a number of different ways. Kevin Green would want us to continue to talk smack and have a little bit of fun and have some passion. Do you own or rent your home? Of course you do, and I'm sure that can be hard work. You know what's easy, though? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. Now, if you listened to the show yesterday, I told you right up front in hour number one, man, let's go. Let it rip. 3 days left in the most challenging year ever. I'm going to give you a little more rope. Have some fun. Have the hell at it. And guess what?
Guess what?
Hey, Romo, what up? Guess what?
Guess what?
You had the hell at it. It was awesome. That was the most fun we've had on this program in quite some time. We played Jungle Christmas songs, Tobin in Chapel Hill, reset Alvin's famous mix. Ray Buchanan got some run. The Tampa tour stop was revisited by about a half a dozen callers who were actually in attendance that day. Will in Milton damn near got a restraining order put on him after singing me a super creepy invitation to a road trip with him through Colorado. So I'm here to say, let's keep it going. Don't stop now. Because there's just today and there's tomorrow before the year in review, and then we are done. So if not now, then when? 2020 has been kicking our collective asses all year long. Let's keep punching back. Let's keep punching back all the way to the end. Now, you know me. I would never, ever ask you to do something that I will not do myself. So I will get the party started again like I did yesterday. Yesterday, we took a look back at two of Alvin's Jungle Christmas remixes. We started with one from 2016, where Alvin took a gag job by Raider Mike and turned it into our very own rendition of Jingle Bells. Then a year later in 2017, he turned an all-time flame out by Dr. Dave into a jungle version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
It's been a lifetime since we drank beer and shot some pool down on Ventura Boulevard after that Sports Illustrated shoot. And, you know, as kids, you know, our kids grow up, our careers grind on, you know, but we never really change, Jim.
Dr. Dave.
My position in this world has something of substantial community value. While you spend your time perfecting the perfect selfie, I spend my day recovering, saving dying children. Oh, sorry, Jim. I'm done.
There are some things you cannot apologize for. Some of Alvin's best work ever. And today, we have a brand new smash hit to drop. Back in May of 2020, Kyle in Green Bay took a road trip through the West Coast. And he met up with some clones along the way. On his road trip, Kyle ran into Cal in Vegas. The two of them attempted to shotgun a beer together, live, on a Periscope feed. Kyle knew what he was doing. Cal did not. The shotgun attempt for Cal went horribly. but not as horribly as Reggie in the OC calling in the next day to try to shame Cal for it. That went even worse.
Romy, hey, I've been following this kook, Kyle in Green Bay, on his epic tour across the U.S. It's pretty well noted now on the JTP for sure, as you just mentioned. By the way, the JTP goes hard. I had to get in on this, man. First off, Kyle preps Cal's beer for him like you would do for your wife or your girlfriend, you know. It's actually very sweet of him. It reminded me of all the times my 5-year-old has needed some help getting that straw into her Capri Sun. Pretty embarrassing, even for a guy that stopped growing in the 5th grade. Rome, honestly, I'm...
That's not a good call. No. You don't...
All right, so that didn't go too well, right? Lots of heavy breathing, plenty of throat clears, a barrage of one-liners that did not land, and one head-first meeting with the wood chipper that is known as the manual buzzer. Not a great day for Reggie and the OC back in May. So what do you say we try to make it better for him today? Reggie, my guy, you are about to get the Alvin Claus treatment. It is our holiday gift to you, and you, my man, earned it. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is, to the tune of Deck the Halls. I present to you Choke the Calls by Alvin DeLauro featuring Reggie in the OC. We go to the OC. Reggie.
Romy. First off, I love the show and everything. But pretty well noted now. Faces of Meth and Lord of the Rings. Getting that straw into a Capri Sun. Romy. That's kind of what I do. Guy that stopped growing in the 5th grade. Hey, I've been following your wife or your girlfriend. Rome, honestly.
Reggie, honestly. Alvin, honestly. Wow. Reginald, welcome to the club, my dude. Now, you feel free to hit that with a throat lozenge or 50. I mean, should I ask for that again or just leave it alone? We've done our part. Time for you to do yours. And Alvin, time to at least give me one more little taste of that. We go to the OC. Reggie.
Romy. First off, I love the show and everything. But pretty well noted now. Faces of Meth and Lord of the Rings. Getting that straw into a Capri Sun. Romy. That's kind of what I do. Guy that stopped growing in the 5th grade. Hey, I've been following your wife or your girlfriend. Rome, honestly.
I love the way Alvin turns him into a stalker by the end. Andy, what's up? Merry Christmas.
Jim, I knew you were going to do that.
Say it again.
I knew you were going to do the Ambi thingy.
Oh, yeah, I did do the Ambi thing because you're Ambi.
Hold on a sec. It's Andy.
Yeah, I know. It's Rick. Who doesn't know your name, Andy? I know who you are.
Andy.
I know. Okay. That guy, Mike, that just called about the zoo?
Yeah, what about that?
I don't know. My call's probably going to be worse. I was calling to say Merry Christmas, but I really wanted you to tell Garrett. My Garrett, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Did you just refer to him as my Garrett?
Yep.
It's kind of possessive, is it not?
It was a joke.
Oh, more jokes. All right. Thank you, Ambi. Now you're done. Why the hell not, right? It's the holiday season. Let's go to Fabian. Merry Christmas, Fabian. What's up?
Merry Christmas, Romy. Merry Christmas, clones. Hey, thanks for letting me in, Hawk. You're the best in the business, bro. You got this other gig, and honestly, the only break that I have, you know, the only chance is this is my last break, you know, a little 15-minute break, and that's thanks for letting me in, the whole deal. Thanks, dude, for, you know, crazy year, you know? I don't know, the jungle just has kept us, like, right there, kind of like if nothing is happening, kind of, you know, it makes us feel like normal in the whole deal. Anyways, don't want to take none of that time. You guys take care. All of you guys, all you clones, be responsible. Last year, I told you guys, man, if you guys don't get the drink on, you know, get Uber or whatever, but get like a designated driver or just crash out or something. Don't be trying to be all big, I was going to say balls, but anyways, I'm out. Hey, Bella B, thank you. I'm pretty sure you helped out on this one. And all you clones, eh? Hey, Rich Flores, you're the best in the business. Rome, gotta go. I love you, bro. I love you. Late.
Fabian. Tucson, Arizona. John, you made it in. What's going on, John? How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Rome, yesterday I made a belt out of watches. And turned out to be a real waste of time.
A real waste of time because you made a belt out of watches. I see what you did there. That's a good joke. Hey, you got any more?
Hey, Rome, what does Snoop Dogg use to get his clothes clean?
I give up. What does Snoop use to get his clothes clean?
Bleach.
That's not a good call. No.
All right, so now we're doing jokes.
I don't like that call. I don't like that call.
Now we're doing jokes. Let's go to the Bay. Kevin is in the Bay. What's going on, Kevin? How are you?
Good, Jim. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. First time, long time. Here we go. You know Victor and Silk Bra left and the BIC, but do you recall the most infamous clone of all? Larry the red-faced moron has a very shiny nose, loves to sing karaoke, even if his songs really blow. All of the other clones used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Larry join in any smack-off games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Van Smack came to say, Larry, with your nose so bright, won't you host my show tonight? Then how all the clones loved him as they shouted out with glee, Larry the red-faced moron, you'll go down in history. Do-do-do-do.
Wow. You know, like, Kevin, nice job, I guess. Let's go to Rusty in Kansas City. It's good to have you. Rusty, how are you?
Jim, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm
Happy
great.
Happy holidays.
I'm
you
great.
And the crew. Just a funny, quick story. My son Peyton and I yesterday got to get out on the golf course and had the phone there. Decided to kick on the Jim Rome show. I'm trying to introduce the program to the new generation. And so we were having some fun listening. And he says, Dad, have you ever called into that show? I said, Son, no way. I said, I will flame out and get roasted by the clones. So I thought today I owed it to him and me to make the call. And he did pay a compliment to you in saying that you do a wonderful job bouncing from topic to topic, and we both now enjoy the show. I'm a longtime listener, and happy to have you in my life, and you guys have a great holiday season.
Rusty, you tell your boy you got racked. Not only did you not get run or roasted, you got racked. Nice job, racked Rusty. Him. I love that. What's the worst that could happen? Let's go to Phoenix this time. Mike in Phoenix. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Rome. I just had to tell you that they opened a little tiny zoo up by my house the other day. They had one dog in it. It was a shih tzu.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Shih tzu.
Not a very good call.
They opened up a zoo by his house, and they had one tiny dog.
Good night.